Welcome to The Edge. I'm your host, Tom Smith. One of the hallmarks of a totalitarian organization is the enforced isolation of its members from those who object to totalitarian practices. Corporate Scientology's practice of enforced disconnection is actively coerced by their so-called ethics officers, leading to destroyed families. We're discussing Scientology's disconnection policy today on this program with our guest, Kendra Wiseman. Kendra grew up in Los Angeles, went to school at Delphi, LA, and spent a year on staff at the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Born into a Scientology family, Kendra's parents and most of her family disconnected from her in 2005 when she refused to stop speaking to anti-Scientologists online. She currently lives in Beijing, China, where she works as a writer and designer. Her published articles have appeared in the San Francisco Reader, the Sacramento News and Review, and other national and international publications. Welcome to The Edge, Kendra.
Yeah, hi. I'm glad to be on this morning.
Could you give our listeners some background about the practice of disconnection as it's used in Scientology?
Well, sure. Basically, what disconnection is, there's sort of two aspects of disconnection. One is what Scientologists and Scientology say it is, And so how it functions in theory, and the other aspect of it is how it actually functions in practice. In theory, Scientologists say that disconnection is used to protect its own community. And what it basically is if somebody who is part of the Scientology community commits a crime, according to the church, they are then labeled a suppressive person. And if somebody is labeled a suppressive person, or as they call it, SP, no member of their family, who are Scientologists, no other Scientologists, not business associates, friends, anyone else they know as a Scientologist, may not speak to them or have anything to do with them, not even a hello on the street, until that person repents. And that's what disconnection is. Disconnection is the practice of cutting all ties with somebody who has been declared suppressive by the Church of Scientology.
Okay. And who, specifically in the organization, is there some kind of apparatus to enforce that practice?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Is there an apparatus to enforce that? By and large, Scientologists enforce it for themselves. The thing with disconnection is that if there's a law in Scientology that says if you refuse to disconnect from somebody, you too will be labeled a suppressive person. So you have to understand there are people who have spent 20, 30 years in Scientology, or kids that are growing up in Scientology that have nowhere else to go. Their friends are Scientologists, their customers are Scientologists, their workmates are Scientologists, their bosses, their landlords, their loved ones, their spouses. And they're asked to disconnect from person A. Say person A has been declared an SP. And if they refuse to do so, they too will be declared a suppressive, and therefore everyone they know will disconnect from them. I mean, people are under the threat of losing everyone they know and care about, and it's a very dangerous situation. Most people capitulate. Most people go, okay, well, I'm just not going to talk to this person anymore. It's a lot less trouble than losing my entire life.
Yeah. Now, you grew up in a Scientology family. Your father and mother were both Scientologists. Most of your family, uncles, aunts, sisters, brothers, were Scientologists.
Right.
Can you tell us, give us some background about your life growing up in a family that was in Scientology?
Well, the very interesting thing about Scientology, I've spoken with some other ex-Scientology kids, people who grew up in a similar situation to me. The interesting thing about growing up in Scientology is that it's like living in, one of the critics relates it to The Truman Show. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but
yes.
It's like being in a bubble that you don't realize is there. Scientology is a very insular community. They prefer to patronize Scientology businesses. They prefer to engage in Scientology activities. So while I got to do most of the things that other kids get to do, you know, I went to school, but I went to a Scientology school. I took art classes, but they were, you know, taught by Scientologists. Most of the other kids there were Scientologists. I went to, you know, after school, I went to course at a Scientology center. So you don't actually realize that you're in this sphere where no critical information is coming in, where you're not ever getting the other side of the story, where you're very rarely being exposed to information that's either anti-Scientology or even neutral about Scientology, to be honest with you. And you assume that everyone is just like that. That's the way it is. That's the way the world works. And when you start to, you know, some people never start to break out of that. Some people live their whole lives that way, and they never actually step out and, you know, see that there are other opinions out there that are just as valid or more valid than Scientology. But some people do, and I think it's when you really start to reach for something else as a Scientology child, when you start to look for something different, when you start to disagree, that's really where the problems begin.
And for you, where did that disagreement start?
Woo, that's a complicated question. There were a lot of different things that started me down the road to leaving Scientology. One of those things was that I became interested in other religions, and I was punished at Scientology school for studying about other religions. I was looking into, oh, everything. I was reading books about Buddhism, about, you know, witchcraft, Christianity, you name it. I had a book about it. And I, you know, when the teachers of that school actually found out that that's what I was doing with my time, was reading these other religious books, I got in trouble. And I don't know whether the school actually issued this order or whether the parents decided to do this themselves, but many of the parents at Scientology school told all their children, you're not allowed to speak to Kendra until she comes around, until she stops trying to reach outside Scientology. Well, I've got a really big mouth, so, and I'm stubborn. So I dug my heels in, and I said that I still wanted to read these books.
Yeah.
And that was something, that was, you know, sort of the first, one of the very first clues to me that something wasn't right. And the situation just escalated. I got very stubborn about reading those books. The parents around me started getting concerned and calling me and saying they didn't want me at their home and they didn't want me around their children. And I was then put into a, you know, finally the Scientologist came to me and they said, okay, look, if you want to leave Scientology, we'll let you, but you have to undergo a confessional on our e-meter, which is like a lie detector.
Yeah.
So when I was 15 years old, every night after school, I was sent to the Scientology Center and I was put on this lie detector and they would ask me extraordinarily personal questions about my life, and this went on, you know, maybe 4 hours a night for 8 months. And I just, you know, I really didn't like it. I didn't appreciate the invasion of privacy. I didn't think that this was going to change my opinion. And so the more I expressed my disagreement with it, the worse it got. And that sort of escalated until I was pretty much, you know, I was done with it. The other thing that contributed to my wanting to leave Scientology was I actually looked at, I'm sure you've heard about this, your listeners have probably heard about this, the secret materials of Scientology, these super secret upper level documents that you're not supposed to read until you have gone through all the necessary processes to get there.
Yeah.
Well, I was so curious because I'd been told my whole life that these processes would save me, that when I got to that level, it was amazing, it was incredible, it was life-changing, I would get superpowers, you know, and what kid doesn't want superpowers? I thought to myself, on the one hand, I feel like this is an abusive environment. On the other hand, I've been told since I was a baby that these materials are going to change my life. So I want to find out if, you know, is it worth it to just stick it out through all of this? So I went ahead and I looked at the materials when I wasn't supposed to, and of course, you know, I found out that it was all about aliens, it was all about alien spirits sticking to your body, and I just that was the final straw that made me decide it was time to go.
Yeah, and it didn't kill you, obviously. In contradiction to what Hubbard put warnings that this material is calculated to kill people, and you die in a month, and all this other stuff. All the fear mongering proved not to be true.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, honestly, reading that material, I was terrified. I'm sitting there holding this stuff in my hand, going, "Oh God, what happens if I get pneumonia in 3 weeks and I fall over dead? It'll be my own fault." And now I'm looking at this highly secret material. It's going to ruin my mind. And but you know, years later, you look back on that attitude and you think, how ridiculous is that? That's just so silly. Of course, reading something, no matter what it is not going to kill you.
Yeah.
But at the time, if you've lived your entire life in an environment that is just so shut off, you don't even realize you're shut off. And then you start stepping out of it. It's a really terrifying experience.
And how did you cope with that terrifying experience? How did you deal with that?
Not very well at first, to be honest with you. I didn't do a very good job. You know, my parents did not disconnect from me right away. This isn't something that happened right after I left Scientology. I kept it a secret that I had seen those materials. I kept it very much a secret that I had had anything to do with, you know, that I'd looked at anyone's materials. I didn't fully express my disagreements with Scientology because being raised there, I knew that it was wrong to speak badly about Scientology in public and that saying anything critical of Scientology might get me thrown out and disconnected from my family. So I didn't say anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I didn't say anything about it for several years, actually. But when I first left, I was 17, I got out, and the feeling of finally being free of Scientology was so incredible. It was, I can't even tell you, you know, you're walking down the street. The day that I left, I walked down the street to the local coffee shop, and I just thought, this is the best day of my life. I will never have to be disciplined in a Scientology organization again. I will never be put on a lie detector to find out what sexual activities I've been involved in, you know, as a 15-year-old. I will never again have to experience abusive work hours at Scientology organizations. I will never again have to be there. I will never again have to, you know, do any of this stuff, do these brainwashing routines, none of it. And it was just so liberating.
Okay. You mentioned abusive work hours as a 15-year-old. Can you tell us about that?
Well, sure. Many organizations run by Scientology require their staff to work up to 20-hour days, sometimes longer, and many of the staff are minors. Sometimes this is actually protected in law in some organizations because Scientology has religious status as a religion in the United States, and they're tax exempt, and therefore the labor board can't go in there and say, this is illegal, you guys have to stop doing this. Scientology goes, you know, anybody who criticizes work hours like that, Scientology goes, well, you're a religious bigot, you're against my religion, this is, you know, discrimination against my religion. It's actually not. There are children in Scientology organizations, some as young as 14, that are working 20-hour days. They don't have time to eat. They're, if they get in trouble in a Scientology-run organization, they're made to eat only rice and beans or the leftovers of other members. They can't speak to people who are not in trouble. I mean, this is like a very dangerous environment for kids.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was lucky to escape most of that. I didn't join the inner core of the Scientology workforce. I was in an outer organization, as you mentioned in my introduction, the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. It's not a religious group. It's run by Scientology, but it's not staffed by this Scientology organization.
It's a separate corporate entity, then.
It's a separate corporate entity. It's got nonprofit status in the United States. However, they do take the head of Citizens Commission on Human Rights takes their orders from Scientology.
Right, the Office of Special Affairs.
Exactly, that's correct. That's correct. So we were, even though this isn't necessarily a religious entity, the organization that I was working for, CCHR, we were working, you know, I was 15, 16 at the time, we were working 20-hour days sometimes. Sometimes I wouldn't go home for 2 days straight. You know, we were made to, sometimes we were given a quota of how much money we had to get out of our members. They'd say, we need $30,000 and nobody in this room is going home until we get it. And we'd be there till 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a friend of mine who actually had to beg her dad to donate $300 so that we could go home. And we were 16 at the time. So it was, that kind of stuff is really common.
Yeah.
In Scientology-run organizations.
Where does that money go? All the money that you raise, did you ever find out where it goes, who gets it, who's in charge of it?
It depends. Now, Scientology has many different corporations that they oversee. There are many different Scientology entities that all have different legal statuses. The money, it's a very complicated money chain. Any money raised directly by the Scientology organization itself goes into buying property, goes into printing propaganda, and, you know, goes to, you know, usually purchasing property is one of the major expenses, and, you know, throwing birthday parties and big gala dinners and promotional activities. I'm sure some of it, I don't have proof of this, but I'm sure some of it gets funneled into the harassment of critics and, you know, slandering those who speak out against Scientology in the media.
Yeah.
As far, but as the individual organizations that aren't necessarily in the public eye are not supposed to be really associated with Scientology like CCHR, these organizations, usually the money just gets spent on themselves. They really don't make that much, and it gets spent on putting out propaganda, you know, sending propaganda to other countries. A lot of it gets spent on shipping, producing promotional videos, that kind of thing.
Okay. And this is CCHR?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, your experience there with CCHR, you were working for them for a certain period of time, though, but you had left Scientology during that time you were working for them?
Well, it's interesting. I left Scientology, and growing up as a Scientology kid, I didn't really feel like CCHR was part of Scientology. I believed mm-hmm. whatever I'd been told, that CCHR was a separate organization. Mm-hmm. It's an anti-psychiatry organization. Scientologists as a whole believe that psychiatry is, and I quote, the ultimate cause of decline in the universe, the sole reason that mankind is failing, the source of all of our problems is psychiatry. And CCHR is an entity set up by Scientology to destroy psychiatry. They want to wipe the practice of psychiatry off the face of the earth. And so even though I wasn't really interested in Scientology anymore, I still believed that psychiatry was the ultimate evil in the universe, and that they were preventing people from getting help, and that, you know, it was a destructive practice. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really realized yet that, you know, that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided that I was going to leave Scientology, but I still wanted to do something good for mankind, and I decided that I was going to work for CCHR, and I did. I ended up working with them for about a year. But I found out during my stint of working there that Scientology and CCHR are inseparable. And these two organizations, you can't have one without the other. You mm-hmm. really can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So CCHR is essentially an extension of Scientology to the campaign and crusade of propagandizing against psychiatry then.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to say that every single person who works there really does believe that they're doing the right thing. I mean, it's hard for some people to understand. When they hear about things like this, when they hear about CCHR, when they hear about, you know, parents disconnecting from their kids, friends leaving friends, I think, well, that's horrible. Those people must be so evil. But if you want to everyone who works at CCHR, anyone who's ever engaged in the practice of disconnection, they really do feel like they're doing the right thing. And they feel like that because Scientology, as the corporation and as a philosophy, has told them that this is the right thing to do.
Yeah. So the people there who work there, in your experience, are well-meaning people. It's just that operating off this information, which originated from Scientology's founder, L. Ron Hubbard, that psychiatry is the source of all evil in the world, and therefore we have to constantly fight it.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Okay. It's really been difficult for myself, and I think that not only for me, but for any kid that has, you know, left Scientology, to think that you spent so many years with these people as your friends, and you still like them, you still know that they're good people, you still know that they are, you know, that they have everyone's best interests at heart, and that's why they're doing what they're doing, and yet, because of Scientology's policies, when you turn around and start criticizing the practice of, you know, trying to obliterate psychiatry, or criticizing the practice of disconnection in public, you become evil in their eyes.
Yeah.
And that's one of the really harmful things about disconnection, is you're sitting there on the outside of the bubble now, looking in, going, I still like you guys, and I really wish it didn't have to be this way, but I've got to say this. I've really just got to stand up and say it.
Yeah. Now, that practice, actually, of attacking psychiatry in the corporate Scientology itself, specifically under the Office of Special Affairs, that really extends to other groups that are attacked, groups that use Scientology that are unaffiliated with corporate Scientology, groups that use practices that are different than Scientology, and they can be perfectly safe, wholesome practices, but they're in competition with Scientology. And are you at all familiar with the operations against these groups?
Well, you know, I don't have any personal knowledge of operations against those groups, because I don't. I was recruited at one point when I was 16, when I was just about to leave. I was recruited to join the Office of Special Affairs, which, you know, we've mentioned this several times. It's one of Scientology's their intelligence branch. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are there to track down critics. They're the ones who are there to track down any groups that are in opposition to Scientology, any members of the media that might be saying things about Scientology in public that are critical. And I was recruited for them to work for their organization.
Mm-hmm.
And happily, I said no. So,
yeah.
So no, I haven't personally been involved with attacking anybody.
Okay. All right, well, fair enough. After you completed you worked for CCHR for a certain period of time, there are certain things that happened that got you to decide, you know, well, you know what, I want to leave this behind me, I want to strike out on my own. Can you tell us more about that and the direction you took after that?
Well, sure. So I left CCHR, and about 2 or 3 years, I didn't actually do... I didn't talk about Scientology with my parents. I didn't talk about Scientology with any member of my family that was a Scientologist. It was a very... Openly, I just said, look, it's not for me, and I didn't discuss it any further than that. I had a lot of people ask me, you know, why have you left? I don't understand why you left. You're doing a terrible thing. You're losing your eternity. This is destructive. But I was very quiet about my true feelings about it. I didn't criticize openly, and I really had no intention of doing so. It took me several years to find stability. I got a job in a non-Scientology company. I got an apartment and, you know, really started living my life, went to a non-Scientology school, and it really opened my eyes. And when I was 19 years old, I decided, at the suggestion of my parents, to move to China. And I did. I jumped at the opportunity. It was great. I came out here and I started living, first in the north and then in Beijing, and it really changed the way that I looked at the world.
Yeah.
And after a few years, actually, my mom came out to visit, and the subject of Scientology came up. And while she was here, and to make a very, very long story short, I let it slip that I had seen these secret documents when I was a young woman. About, I guess, 6 years before that, I had seen these secret Scientology documents, and I've got to tell you, that didn't go over very well.
Yeah.
And as a result, you know, there was a big flurry in the church. Reports were sent into the church about the fact that I had seen these documents when I wasn't supposed to. And for support, I turned to an anti-Scientology group on the internet. And I decided that I would anonymously post my story and ask for help. And after I'd anonymously posted this story, it was really interesting. Within 4 or 5 days of my story going on the internet, I got a call from my parents that essentially said, "We know that you're, you know, we've been told, we know that you're putting anti-Scientology information on the internet, and if you don't stop doing that, we're going to have to disconnect." And, you know, this process lasted several months, and there was a lot of back and forth about it, but eventually I said that I was not going to stop speaking to anti-Scientologists, and that was the last time I heard from my parents and family.
So they all, I mean, mother, father, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, grandparents, they've all disconnected from you.
That's correct.
And have you made any attempt to contact any of them?
You know, I did, and interestingly, I'm glad you brought that up. I did send them, I used to send them a letter every, you know, month, every 2 months, just say hi. I'm sure that they do want to know how I'm doing. And a couple weeks ago, I guess about a month ago now, I ended up putting up a site called xscientologykids.com. And as soon as I put that up, within about 4 or 5 days, I heard from my parents for the first time in 3 years, and it was a very exciting time for me to get a letter from them. I hadn't heard from them for a very long time, so they asked me to please keep the details of that letter private and personal. But I did hear from them after putting up the Critical website, so things are moving forward.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Critical website. What website is that?
Well, myself and two other women, one of them is named Astra Woodcraft, and the other, Jenna Miscavige Hill, the niece of the leader of Scientology, have got together, and we've put up a support group for children who have left Scientology and are looking for answers and looking for other people to talk to and other people to support them. And we also provide easy-to-understand information for people who've never had any dealings with Scientology before. I know I've heard so many people say, you know, they've tried to look at other critical websites, and the other critical websites are they're great. They contain a ton of information, and they're really good sites, but they're a little bit hard to understand if you've never had anything to do with Scientology before and you don't understand anything about it. So we decided to put up a site not only for kids that grew up in Scientology, but also for people who don't know anything about it, don't know anything about it. It's a very complicated topic. And that website is called xexscientologykids.com.
And xscientologykids.com, xscientologykids.com.
That's right.
And it's a good resource for children who have been in Scientology and have gotten out or want to get out, and also for people who are unfamiliar with Scientology and want to know more about it.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm asking that as a question. That's what it is?
Oh, yeah, no, you're exactly right. That about sums it up.
Okay. All right. Now, you actually work with two other women on this who have had experiences growing up in Scientology. Now, I think one of them, Jenna Miscavige Hill, who's actually a niece of the head of corporate Scientology, and that's David Miscavige.
That's right.
Okay. And her father and mother are out, have left Scientology, and she is also... she's also out of Scientology as well.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. I think I recall she was on a program, a television program, maybe a month ago, a little over a month ago?
Yeah, she was on. She was featured on Inside Edition about a month ago. She's also recently done, her and Astra have recently done Nightline, which hasn't aired yet, mm-hmm. And that should be coming out in a couple weeks.
Okay. And that's on ABC Nightline?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, the really interesting thing as well about the fact that I got together with those two girls, I find this fascinating, is that all of us have sort of been declared persona non grata for totally different reasons. And something that people ask me a lot of the time is, what is it that can get you declared a suppressive person? What are these crimes? You know, is it murder? Is it, you know, is it Grand Theft Auto? What is it that gets you, according to Scientology, what are the crimes that get you declared a suppressive person? And it's actually fascinating because the types of so-called criminal activity that the Church of Scientology, or the Corporation of Scientology, rather, has designated as high crimes include things like copyright violations, or, you know, practicing Scientology outside of the Scientology umbrella corporation. So if you take Scientology material and you practice it somewhere else without doing it in a Scientology center where you're paying to do it,
yeah.
If you offer this service, this so-called spiritual service, for a price that's less than what Scientology is charging for it, you can get declared a suppressive person. These are criminal activities.
Yeah. So, in other words, if you're a competitor of any way to Scientology, they label you as a suppressive person.
Exactly. And not only that, but even more heinous than that, taking legal action against Scientology is actually written into policy as a suppressive act. So, testifying against a Scientologist, testifying against Scientology, voting for legislation that might hinder Scientology, bringing a lawsuit against any Scientologist or the organization of Scientology, asking for a refund. These things are illegal in the Scientology justice system. And so what you get is people who have been involved in illegal activities in Scientology, been the victim of crimes inside the Scientology organization, they actually can't go to the police, they actually can't file suits, they actually can't exercise their basic human and civil rights without being thrown out of the organization with their entire, you know, roster of Scientology friends and family disconnecting from them. You know, if you even consider bringing suit against Scientology for maybe not giving you your money back, you'll be thrown out. That's it. No more connection with your family if they're Scientologists. No more connection with your friends. We even have one girl who on our website who was sexually molested in Scientology when she was 14 years old, and she was told never to speak about it again and certainly not to go to the police.
Yeah, yeah.
Or she might get thrown out. So, I mean, this kind of stuff, in theory, what they're saying to you is, well, disconnection and these high crimes, you know, these are necessary to protect our religion. But that's theoretical. In practice, what it does is prevent people from exercising their basic human rights. It prevents people from exercising their civil liberties. It prevents people from, you know, participating in society.
Yeah. We actually had an infamous case here Tampa Bay area over in Clearwater, where there was a woman who had two of her daughters were raped by her husband. His name was Anthony Strawn, son of Amanda Ambrose, recently deceased, who raped both of her daughters. They were minor children, both under 12, actually. And the Scientology, corporate Scientology in Clearwater, the Flag land base, coerced her repeatedly to shut up, not go to the sheriff's department to report these crimes, and they are serious crimes, not report them repeatedly. And finally, they told everybody connected with her, to disconnect from her. Well, she eventually divorced this guy and left the state, much to her relief, and I guess she's doing pretty well now. But it was a really horrifying, confusing, disorienting experience for her, to her husband raping her daughters. And then she has to be quiet about it. It's just amazing that an organization like this considers itself above the law, above criminal law.
It's really amazing. That is really the case. And the other interesting thing to note as well, especially for Scientology kids, is that Hubbard's works are peppered with terminology and phrasing that puts down and makes less of other religions and law enforcement. There are a couple quotes from Hubbard where he says, you know, democracy has done nothing for mankind except, you know, suppress him. Priests don't do anything for mankind except suppress them. They push people further into the mud. They're systems that don't make sense. This kind of stuff is harmful, blah, 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 blah. And so even though that's not something that's commonly talked about in the Scientology community, because it's so ingrained in Hubbard's writings, his distrust for medical doctors, his distrust for, you know, the law, you know, his distrust for government organizations.
Yeah.
People pick up on that, and when you're growing up in Scientology, you don't even have to be told. You're reading all this stuff that everyone tells you is true, that saying, you know, democracy is bad, and, you know, the law is dangerous, it's unjust. If you get caught up in the real-world legal system, you're only going to get caught up in, you know, a terrible situation, and nothing's going to work out. Only the Scientology justice system is a just system. And so you just start believing it. And a lot of these kids that grow up in there, it's not that they want to go talk to the authorities. They've been told their entire lives the authorities are going to send them to a psychiatrist and brainwash them, or the authorities are going to stick them in social services, and they're never going to see the light of day again, and it's going to be awful, and blah, blah, blah. And so you've got a whole community of people who distrust the government, and who distrust the law, and who don't believe that the law is capable of helping them.
In other words, what they do is portray governments and law enforcement as inhabited by boogeymen.
Right, exactly. That's very true. And on the personal side of this connection, on the personal side of I was saying that there's this list of high crimes that can get you thrown out of Scientology. Another one of those high crimes in the Scientology justice system is speaking badly about Scientology in public. Anything you say in public, and I'm actually going to quote here because it's really interesting. The high crimes are public disavowal of Scientology or Scientologists in good standing with Scientology organizations, public statements against Scientology or Scientologists, but not to the church. Writing anti-Scientology letters to the press, or giving anti-Scientology or anti-Scientologist data to the press. So being a whistleblower, basically, in any way can get you thrown out, labeled an SP, and your friends and family have to disconnect from you.
Yeah, and in practice, public means if you say it to another Scientologist, if you tell another Scientologist about it. And there's plenty of precedent things that have happened actually to show that it isn't putting it on a billboard or putting it on any kind of a media channel. It's actually, you could just tell someone in a private conversation, you know, hey, I saw such and such and such and such with I saw David Miscavige drunk on scotch or some such thing. Then
you're absolutely right. Anything,
yeah.
Basically, Scientology is unbelievable. The Scientology Corporation is unbelievably conscious of its own PR. It's unbelievably conscious of its own PR. I mean, above and beyond what you may see from other corporations, other so-called religious entities. This group is terrified of people who've been inside going out in public and saying bad things about Scientology. I know a whole lot of people. And we're talking dozens that I've personally talked to, people who left the inner core of Scientology, who were not allowed to leave until they signed a legal statement that said, I'm leaving because it's my fault, I was never abused in Scientology, anything I ever say in the future about Scientology being bad is incorrect and a lie. You know, the only reason I'm leaving is because I'm a criminal. And they had to sign a piece of paper saying that before they were allowed to walk out the door.
Sounds like the techniques of Korean brainwashing, the kind of things that we saw around the Korean War.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting because people keep asking me, well, then why don't they just refuse to sign those papers? Why don't they just refuse to walk out? Why don't they, you know, why don't they just refuse and walk out? Why don't they just leave? You have to understand that if they sign those papers, the corporation and their superiors are holding this threat over their head that if they don't sign that paper, they're never going to see their family again. If they don't sign that paper, they're never going to see their friends. If they leave without permission, which is another crime in Scientology, leaving without permission. If you leave without permission, you are going to get declared a suppressive person. There's this constant threat of, if you do this, you're going to get declared. If you do that, your friends and family and business associates and everything are going to disconnect from you. And therefore, you know, most people just sign the paper.
Yeah.
They want everything to be okay. They want, all they want is to be allowed to live on their own terms somewhere else, and they're thinking to themselves, I'll sign anything, I just want to get out of the building.
Yeah.
Sign anything, I just want to be allowed to leave.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as they get out the door, they realize that they've just signed their rights away.
Yeah. Kendra, we're going to take a quick break for a station identification, and we will be back after that with more from our guest today, Kendra Wiseman.
You're listening to WXYB, Indian Rocks Beach, Tampa, 1520 AM, the voice of Hillsborough Community College. Talk radio.
The revolution will be broadcast.
Back with Kendra Wiseman, who we've been talking this hour about Scientology's practice, corporate Scientology's practice of disconnection, where using the coercion from what they call in the organization an ethics officer, spreading information to the person's associates and family members to disconnect, in other words, sever any kind of ties with them, financial ties, business ties, family ties, with this person as a means to control that person and control their associates. And this is really, as we have seen, and this is, I guess, the second show I've done on this particular topic, we've seen that this is really a human rights crushing practice that is presently tolerated in this country. There are countries where this sort of thing is definitely not tolerated. There are European countries that look askance at any organization that advocates breaking up of a family, where there are age-old values in the value of a community, the integrity of a community, has so much more importance and value put on it, where there's more spirit, group spirit, esprit de corps, and any practice that undermines that and seeks to destroy that, like this disconnection practice in Scientology, is simply unacceptable. Kendra, now you're in a country, you're actually in Beijing. By the way, are you going to go to the Olympics?
I probably am, yeah, I think so. Ticket prices are out the roof right now, but we'll see. I'm interested in going.
Yeah. In China, the People's Republic of China, Scientology does not have any legal existence.
No, they don't. They don't. And, you know, it's a really interesting thing here because neither do a lot of legitimate religions. So it's sort of, I don't really feel comfortable using China as a, you know, example of how people should treat Scientology, because China's really not that open to, you know, legitimate religions and legitimate religious practices. It's actually amusing that Scientology is banned in China, because they've got a lot of, the Chinese government and the Corporation of Scientology use a lot of similar methods to control the populace and, their parishioners.
Yeah. Would you have any advice to our listeners, and some of them may be kids or young people who are considering leaving Scientology or have recently got out of Scientology, can you provide them with any sort of guidance, any things that you've learned about readapting yourself and socializing yourself to the real world?
You know, it's such a long process for everybody. I don't think I've met a single person that's taken less than 2 years to readapt themselves to the world. And most of the time, just like any process in life, most of the time you don't even realize you're going through it until you're out the other side. At almost any point in your existence, you feel like, okay, this is where I am. And the realization that you're going through a major change in your thought process is something that doesn't hit most ex-Scientologists or Scientology kids until well after the fact. But one thing I can tell them is the most important thing is to be true to yourself. You've just got to listen to yourself. Listen to your instincts. It doesn't matter if you decide to go back to Scientology later. It doesn't matter what, you know, whether you like Scientology or don't like it. Whether you feel that the, you know, a lot of Scientology kids, when they first leave, feel that the management is screwed up, but the Scientology itself still works. That's okay. It doesn't matter what your viewpoint is. The most important thing is that you're true to your own beliefs and that you realize that nobody, absolutely nobody, has the right to tell you what to believe. You know, that's just one of the wonderful things about being a human being is that you get to decide what to believe for yourself.
Yeah. What did you find? Now, before you left, you started looking at different things, looking outside the group, looking at commentary about Scientology from people who were former members and those who were never members, and did you find any of that helpful?
You know, to be honest, because growing up in Scientology, you've been told your entire life that anybody who criticizes Scientology is an evil person, and they're crazy, and they're going to use you, and they're going to hurt you, and you should never speak to somebody who's anti-Scientology. And when I started reading those websites, when I started talking to people who were against Scientology, I was scared of them. I really was. I thought that they would, you know, take any personal information that I gave them and use it against me. I thought they were, you know, awful. But as I was reading the things they were writing, some of the things that, you know, some of those paragraphs on those web pages just jumped out at me. They wrote a lot about things that they found odd in Scientology, things that they didn't agree with in Scientology, and I thought to myself, oh, that's weird. I don't agree with that either. That's strange, you know, I have the same thought, oh no, does that make me evil? Because I agree with these people, and it's a rocky process because you're fighting, you know, your own belief system, you know, your heart, whatever is in your heart is fighting with what you've been told, that anything anti-Scientology is evil, and so you have to figure out, it takes a long time to reconcile, you know, where you stand, and it's a really long process, but in the end, looking back on it, all of the critical information that I got, all of the outside sources that I read, they helped immeasurably, and I'm so glad that they're out there.
Yeah, any sites in particular that you found most informative?
You know, I went to Xenu.net is the most popular. That's Xenu.net.
Uh-huh.
It's the most popular anti-Scientology website out there. And that's really where I spent most of my time when I was sort of lurking around on the internet. There's also another site called FactNet. I believe it's factnet.com, and they've got some really great information on there as well.
Okay.
And, you know, now if anyone's interested, there's also our website, xscientologykids.com, which you know, has information geared towards people who grew up in Scientology.
Mm-hmm. And also has links to some of the sites that you just mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, you asked what are some of the reasons that I decided to leave, and to further answer that question, something that's actually quite interesting is that when I was reading Xenu.net, when I was still considered myself a Scientologist and I was reading this information, some of the things that really jumped out at me were the fact that the critical sites have a lot to say about the fact that Hubbard and Scientologists believe that if you get physically ill, if you get, if you're having problems in your life, if you get physically ill, if you're stressed out, the only possible reason for that is that you have a suppressive person in your life. The only possible reason for that is that you have a suppressive person in your life. So a lot of the time what happens is a kid in Scientology school, and this happens to me many times, will get sick, you know, you'll get a cold and you'll stay home for 2 days. And when you get back to school, you've got to sit down with the ethics officer and they say, now I want you to write down who the suppressive person in your life is. And, you know, you're 10 years old, you're 11 years old, you know.
Yeah.
And you go, well, I don't know. And they say, well, there has to be a suppressive person in your life. Hubbard said that, you know, the only reason you just got sick is because there's a suppressive. Who's been upsetting you recently?
Yeah.
And I had an experience when I was 10 years old. I wrote down the name of the last person I got in an argument with. And I found out a few weeks later that girl, she was 11, got thrown out of school because I had named her a suppressive person. Because, you know, I wasn't even thinking about it. I named her a suppressive person because she was the last girl I got in a fight with. That's something to do with my lunchbox or whatever. She took my sandwich and I, you know, wrote down her name because that was the only thing that was going to get me out of that ethics office. And she got kicked out. And when I was reading those critical sites, I started seeing a lot of information come up about, do you feel that, you know, maybe if you're a Scientology kid, you've noticed that, you know, when you get sick, you're asked to find a suppressive person. You can't think of anybody. You know, maybe you should think about that. And that was one of the things that really got me thinking about, is it true that there are suppressive people? Is it true that sickness means you are connected to a suppressive? And I found out after several years of doing my own research that no, of course it's not true.
Yeah. And your experience, now Hubbard, by his own, I don't know how he came to these conclusions. There's no evidence that there was any kind of real research done, but he said that these suppressive people had 12 characteristics most of the time.
Right.
In your experience, have you ever met anybody who has the majority of those characteristics most of the time?
No. I've met... You know, to answer the flip side of that question, every single person I know has a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these characteristics include things like they speak in broad generalities, meaning that a suppressive person doesn't ever quote their exact source. They just say, everyone says, everyone thinks, everyone knows.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Most people do that. That's that's sort of become common English. Well, they said, well, everybody knows that blah, 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 blah. So that's actually one of the characteristics of a suppressive person.
Mm-hmm.
Another characteristic is that they change news or communication for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Another characteristic is that they don't respond to treatment or reform. So the interesting thing about that characteristic is if Scientology doesn't work for you, you've now got one of the characteristics of a suppressive person because you haven't responded to, quote, treatment and reform. So I believe that those characteristics, by and large, are useless. And I don't know where Hubbard came up with that. It looks like the closest we can find, you know, the closest sort of philosophy we can find is that he took these things straight out of, you know, psychiatry.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, I haven't done extensive research in that by any means, but I have never found in the field of psychology any information describing we'll use a broader term, which actually is used in the area of forensic psychology, an antisocial personality. The actual characteristics of based on actual research in that field are different than the ones Hubbard listed in his policy letters that he published back in the 1960s. And interestingly enough, towards the last six, I think it was the last 6 years of his life, Hubbard was extremely ill. He had a couple strokes, a number of very serious health problems. And, you know, ironically, here is a fellow, last 6 years of his life was chronically ill, but I guess that SP datum, did it apply to him in that case?
No one knows. I mean, who knows? Hubbard lived the last part of his life in seclusion. He was cut off from society. He was cut off from almost everyone else. He was living and hiding on a ranch in the middle of nowhere in California, and not many people really know what happened around the time of Hubbard's death or what he was like in the last, you know, 7-8 years of his life here. And so it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say, but it is an interesting point. And that's another thing that I thought was odd when I started questioning Scientology, was that why was Hubbard sick? Why did Hubbard get, you know, if Hubbard had all this technology that was supposed to stop you from getting ill, then why was he sick most of the time?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just one of those things that after you leave, you go, you know, how silly of me to have believed that this is truth. But while you're in that bubble, and it's really hard to see out of it.
Yeah. Kendra, we are running out of time. We've had Kendra Wiseman on our program today. Kendra grew up in Los Angeles and was spent a year at the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, a group that her father is the president of. She was born into a Scientology family. Kendra's parents and most of her family disconnected from her in 2005. When she refused to stop speaking with people who were outside of Scientology and had other views of it. She currently lives in Beijing, China, which is going the site of the Olympics, which is coming up this summer. She works there as a writer and a designer, and she's published a number of articles in major media. Kendra, it's been a pleasure having you on The Edge.
It's been great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm Tom Smith. I'm the producer and host of The Edge. We will be back again next week with another interesting guest. Bye-bye. Thank you.